This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris, and today on The Breakfast Grill, I'm speaking to Dr. Salahuddin Ayub, the Minister of Agriculture and Agro-based Industry. He's also Member of Parliament for the Pulai constituency in Johor and the Deputy President of Parti Amanah Negara. He's also the Johor State Legislative Assemblyman for the seat of Simpang Jeram concurrently. Welcome to The Breakfast Grill, Dato. It's good to have you on the show today.
Ya, Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Dan salam sejahtera, salam harapan.
All right, so I think I'd like to begin with a look at your ministerial position. You are no doubt a seasoned politician, but tell us why you are the right man for the job of agriculture minister.
Well, I'm nearly 40 years in politics. It is my forte. To answer that question, why I'm the right person to come to this ministry that you got to ask our Prime Minister. But maybe I'm graduated from UPM, and I was a farmer when I was young. I planted cocoa at the time. So I got experience in mingling around with all my kampung people at the time. And through that experience, I'm here now to serve the country, and my focus now is to serve to all our farmers in this country.
I guess the question is, was this really a reward for Amanah? Many past members who left to join Amanah are now ministers and deputy ministers, including yourself. So was this seen to be a reward, this ministership?
I think it's not just only a reward. I think that, is why we... facing those days with past nearly 40 years, and also my colleagues, my president, Dato' Husa Musa, Dato' Mahfuz Omar, we were together in our struggle in past. But for the sake of our struggle and to promote what you call our ultimate struggle to bring what you call it Islam as a way of life, then when we look back, when I recap what passed, especially in 2015, they're moving 30 years behind times. So we have to move forward. So we, at that time, nearly 18 of us, we made a very critical and crucial moment at that time. We decided to leave past and move forward. We form a new party, National Integrity Party, known as Amanah. And after that, after 2 weeks, we form Pakatan Harapan to replace Pakatan Rakyat. And this contribute to our victory in the 14th election. And maybe Tun, as a senior politician, observe all the figures in Amanah, our contribution, our sincerity, maybe our actions speak louder. So I think maybe we are qualified or not. I'm not the right person to mention about this, but the people will judge us. So our quality, our leadership, and our contribution, maybe on that score, our Prime Minister made a very, what we call it, important decision at the time, and among of us have a minister today.
Well, you know, I'd like to get your comment on what political analysts have said. They said that was really a strategy to get more people from PAS to come into Amanah, to draw more PAS members into Pakatan Harapan.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that statement?
Time will tell, because what we did in past through 40 years with past, to promote what we call it Islam rahmatan lil alamin, Islam for all. Okay, and when past what I mentioned just now, turning the direction, became the party that 30 years behind time. So we move forward. So I think with the current situation, the engagement with PAS and UMNO become too close now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think the ordinary people, the ordinary past members, will at the end of the day will understand that I strongly believe that they will leave PAS and join as the amanah on the parties in Pakatan dan Harapan.
Because they're not happy with the cooperation between PAS and AMNO?
They can accept. Because the main struggle is totally different already. And let me say this, the really different, totally different ball game.
Right. I'd like to come back to your role as Agriculture Minister. You assumed office on the 21st of May. So that means now it's just over 100 days. I believe it's about 117 days, if I want to be precise.
Yeah.
What has been your biggest accomplishment so far?
Okay, so first of all, I think I made a very clear direction that I drew a line, very clear line. I don't want to any interference between politicians and the administrative. Between me and all my officers in the ministry. So when I'm in office, when I'm as a minister, please follow me, help me to make to deliver my job, my duty as a ministry. And for example, when in the night time, I will deliver my speech in my ceramah in my party program. So no more longer our officers to involve in such kind of program. Mm. So I drew a very clear line.
Was it difficult to implement that?
No, it's very easy.
Was there a cultural change in having to separate
before this,
government and politics?
They have been used by AMNO and Barisan Nasional. They have to follow all the ministers at that time. So wearing the party's uniform at that time.
You also did away with the practice of getting a political signature for tekun loans, didn't you?
Yeah, we must put a full stop on that. It's not good. It's a good culture. I think in terms of integrity, that is our battle cry that we promise to the people. So now for me to walk the talk.
Are you a reformist? Are you coming into this ministry to reform the ministry, or are you planning to continue
policies? I'm a reformist. I'm not a follower. That's why we left PAS. It's not easy for me. Then we joined Pakatan Harapan through thick and thin in our struggle. So I'm here to reform.
I'm speaking to the Minister of Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry, Datuk Salahuddin Ayub. After this, we'll come back and take a look at some of the policies he plans to continue and those that he plans to review. Stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us on The Breakfast Grill. Today on the show, we have the Minister of Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry, Datuk Salahuddin Ayub. I'd like to come back, Datuk, to what you plan to do at this ministry. Talk to me about some of the policies that you plan to continue and some of the policies that you plan to either reform or review.
We had a policy already. The agro, so-called the agro-food policy, formed in 2011, and will be ended 2020. That's very clear policy already. Mm-hmm. So I just continue what is good for the country, for the people, for my stakeholders, and I just want to deliver a new direction that focus on two areas. One is in terms of food security. This is our duty for this ministry to provide enough food to this country. And secondly, to increase the income of the our stakeholders in this country. I think that the two main pillars that must be fulfilled and must to be accomplished, I think within these 3 or 4 years, the new direction for myself as a ministry.
So food security and to look to increase the income of all agricultural stakeholders.
Yeah, yeah.
One part of that has really been to look at the rice monopoly.
Yeah.
I believe in June, the government established a 6-member task committee to review monopolies across the across all industries in the country. You were part of that, I think, Ministry of Economic Affairs, Ministry of Finance. And one of the monopolies that the government said that they would review was the rice monopoly. So Padi Beras National, Bernas's monopoly or control of rice imports.
Yeah.
You've been quoted to have said that the committee will present its findings and recommendations to Cabinet in August. Do you have any updates for us on that front of dismantling or reviewing monopolies?
I think we, at the ministry level, we got three models already. Okay, one from the our advisory board. Second one is from the ministry itself, led by our KSU, and one is from one task force that led by the UMNO, by the one of the Selangor ESCO, agriculture, the ESCO that in charge of agriculture, and the three models have been presented to the committee. And we are waiting for the for this committee to come up with one model, and at the end of the day, the final model will be brought to the cabinet for the cabinet to decide.
So
maybe it take around October or November.
Okay, so the next cabinet sitting.
Yeah.
For those of us who say may not be familiar with the issue of rice monopoly in this country, can you help explain what are the points of contention?
In terms of food security, we cannot. Time is ripe for us to look back, to review. In terms of the food security, we cannot rely only to one company.
Is it about food security, or is it about the fact that Bernas is wholly owned by Syed Mokhtar Bukhari?
No, it is the matter of food security. In the long run, in the future, we cannot rely only to one company, to one person to handle.
So help me understand it. Bernas controls the imports of all rice into the country.
Yeah. And 30%.
30% of rice consumed in the country is
imported. 70% rely on our farmers.
Okay.
Our local production.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So by opening up or by dismantling this monopoly, you're hoping to allow other companies to come in and import
rice? To make the price to be more competitive.
How can the price of imported rice be more competitive when imported rice cannot be cheaper than local rice?
We want to ensure that the price is not higher than the local.
Has to be higher than local?
Yeah.
How can it be cheaper if local rice is controlled by the government?
When the price of our local paddy or our local rice is, I think we must put a standard on that.
Okay.
Then we break the monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe two or three players to import the rice. So it make they will challenge among themselves to get the cheaper price.
Okay. But that is also dependent on international prices.
Because I strongly believe that the price in Vietnam, the price of the rice in Vietnam and also in Thailand, also in China, is more cheap. If you open the monopoly,
is it likely that the rice produced in Thailand and Vietnam could possibly be cheaper than that of locally produced rice?
Yeah, they're more cheap.
But how can that be? Because the price of local rice is controlled by the government, and Malaysia being a high cost rice producer, it will be difficult to lowering the price of locally produced rice. Will be detrimental to farmers here.
Yeah, we got to protect the local farmers. That's our bottom line, our paramount consideration. The local farmers must be protected. So we just break the monopoly.
So how would breaking the monopoly help the 400,000 rice growers here in this country?
Yeah. They still produce the our paddy fields still produce the rice that that contribute 70% for the local consumption.
Okay.
On top of that, we got to import 30%. 30% of the rice to secure our food security. Okay. Because the price of the rice in Vietnam, in Thailand, is more cheap.
I mean, that's great for the consumer and for myself.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering whether you will then allow for the price of locally produced rice to be lowered.
What
repercussions that will have on farmers? Because the price internationally cannot fall below that of locally produced rice.
Yeah. We must get the good price. Higher than the local price.
What is the new model going to be like? You talked a little bit about the three different models. Is one of the options perhaps re-establishing something like Lembaga Padi Negara, like National Paddy and Rice Board, having one centralized body instead of privatizing it to a company like Bernas?
It's still not controlled by the government. The government interference in this industry still very important to protect our industry, our paddy industry. Mm. So we will consider to form a new agency, so-called the industry Lembaga Perindustrian Padi Negara, to replace Bernas.
Actually, what is Bernas's role when it comes to the paddy industry in your eyes?
Just to import 30% the remaining our rice.
But Bernas's argument is that they act as the final buyer for Malaysia's stockpile, right?
So that is your
they
social
are the buyer
obligation.
Of last resorts. Yeah. Talk to me about the social obligation of Bernas.
Yeah, they have to, because the government gave them the license to the sole importer for the remaining 30%. So they have to fulfill their social obligation to become the last paddy buyer.
Do they distribute subsidies?
No. The government still have to give the subsidy to the farmers, to our farmers, till now.
Right. Okay. I'd like to talk about self-sufficiency in rice. A couple of weeks ago, you set the target for Malaysia to achieve 80% self-sufficiency in rice by 2022. We're currently around 70%. How do we achieve this increase in self-sufficiency?
I'm looking for the new technology to our farmers. When I was in China, so many new technologies in terms of soil profiling, to look back on the using of the fertilizers. So I think it's very timely for me to implement these new technologies to our farmers here. So we need a good cooperation between our ministry and also with the UPM, Universiti Putra Malaysia, and other agencies. And just now we have a short visit in Mardi.
Mm-hmm.
We hope also Maldi will play a important role to ensure that our yield in our paddy field will be increased in the in
Maldi
the,
is the in research the,
in
agency.
The future,
yes.
Yeah.
Right. In that comment that you made about self-sufficiency, you said you were impressed with China's food security.
Yeah, yeah.
China apparently has a rice stockpile of 2 years
that can last two years. Yes,
Malaysia has 22 days.
So
that is 33 times. Yes. China has 33 times what we have.
Yeah. And Thailand moving to 6 months.
Why is Malaysia's rice stockpile so low?
I think because of our production. We are quite far away from the new technologies. So this is the great challenge for me and for this country.
So should we look to produce more locally or import more? Because as you said, it could be cheaper to import from Thailand and Vietnam.
I don't want to speak so soon because it become chicken and egg issues. But in terms of local consumption, we have to increase our new technologies in our paddy field.
Mm.
In terms of food security, we have to import. We have to import. Like Singapore, also the best in this region, still rely on import.
Do we export any of our rice?
No.
So everything we produce is for local consumption?
Local consumption.
Are you looking to perhaps make Malaysia an exporter of rice?
It's my vision in the future, but it must begin today.
Okay. I'm speaking to Dato' Salahuddin Ayub, the Minister of Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry. We're going to continue our conversation on this special extended breakfast grill just after the 8:30 news. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with this special extended breakfast grill. With me today is Dato' Salahuddin Ayub, a man who wears many hats. He is the Minister of Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry. He's also the MP for Pulai and concurrently the Johor State Legislative Assemblyman for the seat of Simpang Jeram. He's also the Deputy President of Parti Amanah Negara. I'd like to come back, Dato, to the discussion we had about making Malaysia a high-tech country in agriculture. Okay. How do you ensure that we strive to become a high-income developed country that is headed for the industrial era, but we do not leave the agriculture sector behind?
I think that we need a new policies regarding from this new government, and I will bring these issues seriously in our, maybe not in this near cabinet meeting, because we cannot just look back at in the 80s and in the 90s. When the Prime Minister at that time only focused on to be Malaysia to be a industrial country,
mm-hmm.
and agriculture sector seemed to be left behind.
Mm.
So nowadays, Tun Mahathir talked so much about agriculture, and we were together in China, and we saw ourselves that China is moving forward, and also very fast in implementing the new technologies in agriculture.
Right.
So through the body language, I can see that Tun nowadays very interested in looking back in agriculture. So when we were in China, the opportunity to sign up the Durian Protocol. Durian Protocol. Nowadays we can export the physical fruit of our durian to China. And before this, we can only export our product with a pulp, in the form of pulp, and nowadays the whole fruit. And by approaching the new concept of contract farming, the players from China will come to Malaysia and they will determine a few of our players in our country and make sure that in terms of the food safety, our durian will be exported to the mainland China. And also to our pineapple, we have the very good variety nowadays. It is MD2.
Pineapple.
Mm. When I was in China, one of the supermarket in Beijing, they can sell about 300 pineapples per day in one supermarket. We can imagine that the whole China will receive or will... We can export our pineapples to China. We can just imagine how we can develop this industry in the future. I think we'll be looking forward to...
So targeting China as an export market for our agricultural products.
Yeah, yes. Not only durian, not only pineapple. We're looking for jackfruit. Now I'm looking for jackfruit to sign up the local, the protocol of the jackfruit. And we are working closely to sign the bird nest protocol. So many more. And we have a quality of vegetables in our country.
Many opportunities.
Yes, yes. So.
I have to ask though, as a durian lover, are we producing enough durian that we can export? Are we going to have enough for local consumption?
We have enough farms in our country. the good variety like Musang King.
You know, you've also called on youths to get involved in the agriculture sector. Yeah. You created various programs, I think, in universities. The idea is to attract youth to go into agriculture. Agrosiswa, I believe is the term. How do you think this will play out in a digital economy? Will agriculture be an attractive draw for young people to participate and to have a career in?
I think we will invite all these youngsters to involve in agriculture, to explore their interest in agriculture. We have a abundant land in our country. We have to develop this kind of land. So we will provide some incentive, loans, and 2 weeks ago, we have a serious meeting with the Agro Bank to then they provide soft loans, and we were looking for the agriculture to move to the big scale when we talk about economy of scale. Mm. So I think this is our vision. To the young entrepreneur, I think we should encourage them. Nowadays, I think Agro Bank will take a challenge to accommodate all these new talents to involve in the agriculture sector.
So what fascinated me in my research for this was how many different areas you have to look at under food security. Right? Yeah. So it's not just rice. Mm. I mean, everything from chilies to beef production. NFC was a big issue that you wanted to reform, wasn't it? Yeah. Have you managed to reform or rebrand the National Feedlot Centre, revive its operations? The idea was to achieve, I think, 30% beef production locally and achieve some level of food security there. Yeah. What does NFC 2.0 look like?
I will involve this very important sector in our agriculture in my new direction. I think we're looking forward to facilitate a few investors from Japan. They're very interested in this industry. And also I was invited by the Ministry of Agriculture from Brazil. And a week ago, he sent me a letter. He wants to come to Malaysia. And we will discuss, and we have a very serious meeting about how to develop our ruminant industry in our country. Mm. So wait and see. Maybe in this few months, our dreams will come true. A few investors from the foreign investors will come to Malaysia. And maybe the concept is joint venture with our local players in this country.
So maybe bring foreign investors in, the capital and the technology that they bring into the country with our agricultural resources.
And we can provide land. We have a satellite land in our country.
As we wrap up the interview, I'd like to get your thoughts and your hopes ahead of Malaysia Day. If you could share your hopes with us this Malaysia Day, what are your hopes for Malaysia Baru?
No corruption. We can minimize the corruption, deliver all our promises in our manifesto, and all the ministers must be minister for the new Malaysia, not only for I'm Minister of Agriculture. Before this, known as Orang Melayu saja, for them only for the Malays, but I'm working very hard so that I can be to be a minister to the all Malaysians. And I think we're working with Stone nowadays. It's a very great challenge. I cannot say that I'm very tired nowadays because I'm only 57.
No.
I can say that.
he's got more energy than all of us combined.
When I say that, I think I will meet my Waterloo.
I've been speaking to Dato' Salahuddin Ayub, the Minister of Agriculture and Agro-based Industry. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Okay. And may I take this opportunity to wish you and to everyone listening, Selamat Hari Malaysia.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm Melissa Idris for The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.